are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolli right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
We go.
Oh, that's a nice difference.
I screwed up. I'm so verhuddled. This
up?
Much talent in a room.
I know, right?
There's so much talent that it's thrown my. I'm off my magnetic pole.
Oh, okay.
Or my magnetic Italian, depending on. Lady.
How are you?
Sorry.
What I was saying.
There
we go. Okay.
I'm a kidder.
No, I was.
People saying, were just like, what were you saying?
No, I was simply saying not much of anything. Except I think today is the first day of spring, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. So happy spring, guys.
Thank you.
Too.
Happy
spring.
Yeah.
Spring
has sprung.
There you go. Now that I screwed up the audio in the beginning, now I'm going to play every sound we have in the song.
Oh, awesome. My
it doesn't
God.
Matter. And if you don't like it, Michael.
Uh-oh. I guess he told me, didn't
he? Oh, that's great.
We would like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Award winners, Michael. Mm-hmm. We're all about award winners today.
I know
that you have received many awards and accolades in the past, and as you know, I have been nominated for an Ovation Award, an LA Weekly Award, an OC Weekly Award, a Joseph Jefferson Award, a Broadway World Award, a Backstage Garland Award, and I've never won a goddamn thing.
He's male.
But our guests, and I'm not bitter at all.
He's Susan Lucci.
I am. I'm a taller, hairier Susan Lucci. But our guests today have won awards, which reminds us that good things do happen to good people, which we are very happy about.
Yes, they do. Indeed, Paul, and joining us today in studio are two LA Drama Critics Circle Award winners, one for lead performance as Effie in Doma Theater Company's production of Dreamgirls at the Met Theater in Hollywood, and the other for featured performance as Ken in Red, that fabulous play at International City Theater in Long Beach. Please welcome Constance Jewel Lopez and Patrick Stafford. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming and doing this. It was an exciting night for you the other night. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Were you there for it?
I was not. No, I was not there. There wasn't really too much press there, actually. Well, I think they were. It was at the Colony this year.
Yes,
so
correct.
It was a
more
restricted.
Colony's not a big space.
Yeah, it's a smaller space. Beautiful theater.
That's the one on La Cienega, right?
No, that's in Burbank.
Oh, okay.
It's right by IKEA.
Yeah.
Yes, well,
exactly.
The Colony's the one that has the best parking of all.
Yeah, it's free and it's abundant.
Yeah. Yes.
You can go to the theater and then buy some things at IKEA on your way home.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Yeah. Go to Flappers and laugh.
So, Paul, let me ask you first, how was your week?
My week was good. I went to see 50 Shades, the musical.
That's right.
Which I want to talk about in a sort of mini review. But, you know, it brought up a question, and it's a good show for this question to come up. And
I'm
I don't know if
so
I've asked
afraid to hear
this question before. But and I would like to pose it to our in-studio guests as well, because they're theatrical types, and I'm sure they attend as well as perform in theater. And it was in the audience that this happened. What is protocol when you are scooting down an aisle and people are already seated? Do you give them the front of your body or the back of your body when you scoot by them? You know, because you know how people have to stand up?
It depends, on who you're scooting by, don't you think?
I think so. Yeah. But I mean, because sometimes
you might want to go like this, and
all of a sudden, you know, just
turn.
Like someone comes by and they're squeaking by, and then it's like, wow, there's an ass.
Yeah.
You know?
But listen, if I had an ass like that, I would definitely show
but
it
I
to
mean,
somebody.
But I mean, what is protocol? What do you do?
I give backside.
You do backside.
So he does the ass side. I think it's weird to be looking someone in the eye when there's something happening on stage. You know, like.
No, I mean, before the show starts. When you just see.
I thought you were talking about if the show started and you were late. I don't know why.
Oh, no, but that's a good point, too.
I give them the front. Maybe it's a boy-girl thing, because I don't want them in my butt like that.
I'm sorry. That's a soundbite for our next show. We're just going to isolate that.
That's all, like,
Constance
all up
Lopez
in my
says,
business.
I don't want them in my butt like that.
But the thing is that you. It gives me a chance to apologize. It gives me, like, if I'm facing them, I can say, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I think there's that personal kind of thing.
Yeah, but, you know, yeah. I don't know.
Because I always
I don't know. I think too close to them is weird to me. Because if they're true. Standing up and I'm like right face to face, I think I'd rather give them the
that makes sense.
Back.
I don't know. Because it's weird for me because as an audience member, if someone scooches by, I always have to stand up. Because in addition to having long legs, I also have these gunboat size 14 feet.
And then you have to be careful that so, when you don't stand up so fast that you end up kissing the person.
Yeah, yeah.
Or kissing their butt.
Yeah. What do you do?
That's afterwards. Kiss their ass. Yeah.
What do you do?
I actually, yeah, that's sorry. What I do. I yeah. actually kind of do a half stand. Mm. And I kind of. Yeah. You mean when I scoot or when I'm letting somebody by?
No, when you have to scoot in front of them.
You know what? It's really on an angle, to tell you the truth.
See, but Michael, I know you, and I know how polite you are. And, yeah. You are so polite, and I know that you probably hand them an apology note that's embossed with the wax seal and everything.
How was you? So sorry. Here, just take this as a little parting gift.
With a Hershey's kiss attached. How was your week?
Oh, it was fantastic. We had the second show of Jason Grah. And 49 and a half shades of Grah.
Oh, yeah.
At the club and on a sellout basis. Jason Grah for Patrick. And
Michael has a wonderful supper club in North Hollywood called Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal.
Oh, yeah.
And, absolutely. I've been there.
And Jason is a Broadway boy, and he was the original voice of the Leprechaun and Lucky Charm cereal.
Wow.
I mean, he's got quite a history in television and theater and commercials and so forth. And just one of the genuinely funniest people that it's I've ever funny. Met. Very in funny. Life and certainly on the stage.
Nice.
And he just, again, it was one of those knockout evenings that, to keep an audience of 100 plus eating out of the palm of your hand, they couldn't get enough. It was outrageous, the second show.
So, and he always sells out there.
He does. And actually, for any of you listening to us in San Francisco, he will be appearing this evening at Feinstein's at the Nikko Hotel in your city. Mm. And make it a point to, if you want to see some great entertainment, go down to Feinstein's, ladies and gentlemen. Right. So, yeah, it was a good week. Thank you for asking.
Good to hear. Well, let's leap into our show,
yes,
shall we, now
absolutely.
That we've talked about butts and crotches at the start of the show.
Yeah.
We can only go up from here. Our first guest hails from Memphis, Tennessee, but was raised in San Francisco East Bay Area. Yes. She started out as a vocalist in cabarets and soon joined forces with the Bay Area rapper Lyrics Born. Her first show as a professional actress was in a production of Oklahoma at Woodminster Amphitheater in Oakland. She was cast in American Girls Review as, help me with the pronunciation, Kautza.
Yeah, Kautza and Mama.
A role she played in Los Angeles for 2 years. From there, she became a company member of the Will Gear Theatricum Botanicum in Topanga, which is a great place. I used to go by on my motorcycle all the time back when I was young and stupid. I mean the motorcycle, not the theater. It's a great theater. She is also a backup singer for Huey Lewis and the News, and her most prominent local credit, aside from the one that she'll discuss with us today, is playing Sophia in the Celebration Theater's much-lauded production of The Color Purple. Yes. Please welcome Constance Jewel Lopez.
Oh, yeah.
Yay.
You are a friend of my friend Michael Matthews.
Yes, I love him.
And Michael Shepard.
And Michael Shepard.
And Jamie Rudofsky. We had this whole conversation on the elevator.
Right.
You know, those of us that get here a little early,
yeah,
we have time to do a little conversation.
Get to know each other, so, you know. Yeah.
It was just a little technical glitch right now. That's we're sort
right.
of yeah. remedying, but
I love well,
how
guys.
Many how many people have we had from Celebration on the theater? Celebration Theater. We've had Jamie on. We've had Michael Shepard on.
We did.
We haven't had the other Michael.
We had
there's like nine Michaels.
Four Michaels. It's the four M's.
But we had one of your other cast members, lovely girl from American Idol. Tomorrow.
Oh, no. Latoya London.
Yes, Latoya London.
She's really sweet.
Yes.
Sweet girl.
Totally sweet.
She won the Ovation last year for feature.
Yes, she did.
I was nominated if she won. She was amazing. She was great.
Yeah. So why are you holding up that picture of her with the red slash through
it? And the knife through the heart.
Okay, so tell us about the experience. We all go to award shows, and for some of us it ends differently than others.
I'm sorry, Susan.
But,
you're just milking that, aren't you?
But did you know when you were doing the role that you had something special, that you had lightning in a bottle, or was it just like any other show?
So that role, Effie in Dreamgirls, in my type, you know, the bigger girl with the big belting voice, that's the top echelon in musical theater part. Like, I'm sure eventually somebody will write one better, but that is the part that, like, you strive to get. Right. So, and people don't do it a lot, you know, so... Right. I knew that I was happy to have it, but I didn't think about award winning. I don't know. My mind just it just doesn't think that way. Like most actors, I always think, oh, I'm not going to win anything. I'm going to suck. But, you know, like right. that kind of thing. I'm just down on myself. But I just knew that I wanted to give it my all, and I wanted to play my Effie a little differently than I've seen in the past, because I've seen the show a few times, and five times. And it's something that I felt like the Effies didn't do that I wanted to do, and I was adamant about doing that thing. And
okay.
it's not playing the future. Because right. usually when you see Effie, it's like when you first see her come in, she already knows she's getting kicked out of the group. She's going to have this baby. She's going to be sad. She's right. mad at the very beginning. But I was like, I didn't want to do that. So it was like a give and take between Marco and myself. Marco was the director, right. Marco Gomez. Whether I was going to come in and be like mean. And I mean, because the black girl always gets labeled with sassy. But like, what does that mean? Does that mean I'm mad and angry 24 hours a day? It's like, no, she was a teenager like the other girls, and I didn't want to play the future like I knew doom was coming. So we went back and forth, and then he allowed me freedom, which was, I will thank him forever for that, for me to allow her to grow. Because usually when the five times I've seen it, when she gets kicked out, I'm like, bye, bitch. You know, you were mean. Nobody liked you anyway. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right.
So I didn't want that. That's
actually the subheading of the new right. Southern Dream Girls. Bye, bitch.
Exactly. And I didn't want to play her that way. I mean, she was conceited in a way. She knew she was sexy and that kind of thing. And she knew she had talent. But right. she wasn't a mean girl. She loved those other girls. And she believed the lies that Curtis gave.
Yeah.
And it's not until after... Once they say, tell me Miss Jones, that's when she realizes, oh, hell, I'm going to be stuck here forever. And then she starts acting a fool. But before that, wow. she is, you know, she loves them.
Well, and it makes her trajectory that much more poignant. If she's
yes.
playing it, if she's playing it like a victim from the word go, or
exactly.
an angry person
yeah.
who's been victimized from the word go, then she's got nowhere to go. But
exactly.
it's sadder, and that song mm-hmm. is more gut-wrenching
yes.
if... It, with that sense of survivor. And the thing is, you don't even have to be familiar with Dream Girls to know what trajectory she's on. You
exactly.
just have to be familiar with Diana Ross and the Supremes.
Yeah.
You just
Florence
have to know,
Ballard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to know where it went.
Yeah.
And but that's very interesting, because I could see, you know, a lot of performers sort of telegraphing that despair from early on.
And you can't do that
yeah.
because the audience, they're a part of the show too. They need to take this ride with you.
Right.
And if you give it all away at first, that you have they you know you have nowhere to go.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not really based on Diana Ross and the Supremes. It's
no,
kind
no.
of all those girl groups from that
That's
time
right.
of
yes.
that Motown.
Yes.
But the one of the three
the scandal of it was Florence Ballard.
Right.
Was the Effie
right,
person.
Right. I mean, but it is, you're right. It's a hybrid of all of those
right.
things.
Yes.
A matter of fact, I think that was not the girl bands, but what was the great documentary I saw that featured the black female singers? 20 Feet from Stardom.
Yes,
yeah.
right.
They won the Oscar.
So, yeah.
Yes,
so
they did. Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Good. Sweet as that.
Have you seen
yes.
that?
I have not. I've seen clips from it, but I haven't seen the whole thing.
Absolutely.
And
exciting.
Darlene Love is somebody who I really
And she sang it. Did you see her at the Oscars?
Yeah.
Killing it.
And Darlene Love. That was like one of my favorite moments
right?
of the Oscars.
Oh, yeah.
She
was killing it. She was making it happen.
Ain't no one playing me off.
Yeah.
Because she'll drown out
that. Her.
Because she did Hairspray as well. She yeah. was the Broadway Motormouth Maybelle.
So oh, really?
Yes, and doing it.
Wow.
Yes.
No, and the other thing, too, is that people should check the internet for this, but that TV show, Tavis Smiley.
Oh, yeah.
Had on Mary Clayton
mm.
and Darlene Love
yes.
Shortly after the film came out. Because Mary Clayton, I've followed Mary Clayton from way, way back because I'm a big British blues fan, and they had, and she was sang back up on everything, Long John Baldry and Elton John stuff, and before the famous Gimme Shelter, Rolling Stones,
yeah.
you know, thing.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Exciting.
Sorry.
You know, I actually had the honor of seeing Jennifer Holliday do it on Broadway.
Love
so,
her.
Yeah.
I had no idea
when I walked into that theater what I was going to.
And she was so young.
To see on that stage, but it was fantastic.
I bet.
I mean, you're kind of just holding on to your seats the whole show.
Yeah. You know what? Never seen it.
Really?
Never seen Dream
Not
Girls.
The film?
Well, you saw the
How
film.
Dare
no.
you?
Oh,
no.
really?
I've never
you
seen
missed
it.
A treat,
no.
darling, because I was fabulous.
I know.
No, but Jennifer Holliday, she is like, you know, that's another
Well, thank
thing.
You for giving me the tape, though, the DVD before we came here.
Make it happen.
I just dated myself. I said tape.
Ooh-wee.
Thank you for giving me a beta.
A track.
A cassette. Thank you.
No, another thing that I found watching other people do it is that they strive to be her or be. And right. I was like, I can't be that. I'm Constance as Effie, and that's what I'm going to be. I'm going to find the things that are Effie in me and, you know, and make it happen for me. And because I wanted to appreciate my work and I wanted to give good work. I wanted people to be inspired and you know, go away feeling pain and something at the end. And
how did you feel about doing that actual song, that song that everyone knows, that everyone's tried to sing?
Okay.
I am changing.
Yes. I am changing. That's my like go-to song. When I say sing a dream girl song, that's the one I go to. I'm changing. Honestly, it's harder to sing than And I'm Telling You. But And I'm Telling You is so complicated. And the reason why is because when people see And I'm Telling You, they never see it in the context of the show, because like I said, a lot of people don't do it. So they sing it and it sounds so beautiful. And they get up there and they sing so beautiful. They don't understand that it is like the worst point in your life. You are in the gutter. Mm-hmm. It is not supposed to be this beautiful song. It's not. The thing how I feel about it is I was talking to the other two girls, Tyra and Jen, who played Laurel and Dina, and saying that for the every person, whoever plays that character, it's a career changing role. And the reason why is because either you're going to do it right or you're never going to work again. Because if people don't get Dina right, or if they don't get Laurel right, oh, they weren't cast right, or they missed some notes, or they did this. But if you don't do Effie right, they're like, she was bad as Effie, and you never work. Right. So it's so much, it's so much pressure, because if you don't get it together, you are screwed. So you can mess up everything in your life, but that song you cannot mess up. And the reason why is because right before you sing, it's like it's a horrible scene that leads up to it, you know, like horrible, but like, you know, so that builds you up for that, the pain and telling them that you're leaving the group and they're kicking you out and your brother's leaving and all that kind of stuff. And then when you go to sing it, it's not just a silence. It's like silence as if they vacuumed out all the sound of the world, yeah. Because the audience is waiting. They're like, and it's not even like, oh, he's going to leave her. They're like, can she sing this song?
Yeah.
They don't care about Effie. They're thinking about, can Constance Jewel Lopez sing this song? Yeah. And it's like when I get a few notes out, when I hit something, like, you can hear them going, thank God.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
So that's how you feel. It's a roller coaster. Yeah. But the pain of it, you have to, at least for me, I had to carry that around with me for months, because Effie can ruin your life. You know, it's like, she is wonderful. She's so complicated. But what she had to go through was just so awful. And
you got to live there mentally.
I had to live there, because otherwise I could not make it through.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and she had to sing it at the award show.
I sang it at the awards.
Which,
I did.
Which, I mean, not added on the pressure of just being there and being nominated and like looking pretty and standing on heels and all that
stuff. I was
looking
really pretty.
Yeah, you look great.
But before or after she won?
Before.
It was before.
Oh, and so no judgment there.
I mean, she killed it, but it, like you said, the vacuum happened and everyone was like,
that was the word I was looking for when she said that. She's talking about that heavy silence. And
that's
it's like, it's a void. It's a vacuum.
That's exactly what it feels.
And I mean, I was guilty of being like, I turned to my sister and I go, this is going to be great.
That's right.
I was like, this is, you know, they're making her do this song tonight.
And so it's even worse, because right before they introduced, she's like, the time has come. You have waited. She's going to sing it. And I was like, oh, Lord, please let me hit the wrong note.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I mean, you were great. You were absolutely great.
You
and then you also had just a piano, too.
Which he was
not
amazing.
He was amazing, but it's not the normal thing.
Amazing.
Who played for you?
Corey. What's his last name? Corey. Oh.
He won.
Don't hate me, Corey. You won.
He won.
Look him up. I forgot.
Corey Haim.
No.
Oh, God. We'll find that. We'll look
that
up.
He was great. But yeah, you killed it in there.
And he won for musical direction?
I believe so.
Yes. Yes, he did.
That is a good point, though, Patrick, because going up there, it is true, though. You're not going to bring anyone up at an award show for an award they're nominated for who's mediocre in what they're going to present. So the table is already pretty set for you, but I could see this.
The stress level is super high. Yeah.
Well, and she's, like she said, she's this great moment in the show, but that person's not standing there
with
you.
Right.
That's and
true.
You had to,
well,
like,
I
do
saw
this
him,
song.
Though. I found him in the audience. And I was like, okay, I'm singing to you. Then I sang to my husband, but the winning was crazy. That was insane.
Yeah. How long after you performed was the actual presentation?
I performed at the end of the first act. I don't know what that's called in award shows, the first half.
Yeah.
And I was, I think the third last to get an award.
Was it a long? Was it a long evening?
It was.
Award shows usually are.
It was long.
Yeah, it was, but you know,
but it was, the host was so great.
She was great.
She was amazing.
Nicole Parker. We've had her on the show before.
Yeah, she was amazing. That it didn't feel like it. Yeah, it didn't feel like that. It was. It took that long. You know, it wasn't boring at all. I didn't feel like, oh, it's.
She made me laugh.
She did. She was good, and it was just the way they set it up. It just really rolled along.
You know, I used to do a lot of hosting duties. I used to do studio audience warm up quite a bit, and it is a completely different skill set to host than to be a comic.
Yeah,
because you know, and so many of the time they just throw people up to be hosts. That don't have that skill set, but you have to realize that you're the locomotive of the evening.
That's right.
You keep it moving,
and she
it's
did.
Not about you.
She did
you
well.
You know, you're the conduit for all the action. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, you only have to see it done poorly to realize how difficult it is to do. So that's nice to hear that she's a lovely
and she's
woman
just
too.
So talented. She sang, blew
she did
us all away.
Yeah. She was doing.
She was great.
Celine Dion.
I love
Ellen
her.
DeGeneres.
She was.
Oh, really?
She did Pink. That was so funny.
They were auditioning for our Peter. She did a. She said. It up that they were auditioning for
Peter Pan
that was going to be, you know how ABC is doing that now, they're doing musicals. She set it up like all these different people are coming to audition, and so she would be like,
she was like
introduce
Ellen,
them, and then she would do
Celine.
Them.
Oh, that was that's brilliant.
Yeah, it was really funny
when she did the breathing in between the songs.
Yeah, she did Pink for like the
so
Academy
funny.
Awards.
Like some where?
yeah, she was great.
I'm going to hell.
No, Michael's already made that joke. I think your comment, I think, was like, why does Somewhere Over the Rainbow take so many more breaths now than it did in 1939?
Right. The air is bad now. That's why. It was clean back then. And she didn't have to breathe smog.
So let me ask you something, Constance. By comparison to The Color Purple, which is also a very iconic show,
very
beautiful show.
Yes, Celebration, my love.
To be in Dreamgirls, Color Purple, how does that weigh out for you? Or does it? I mean, it's just they're both so
special. The experience is so different, I have to say.
And here you had Allie Willis supporting that.
I
production.
Love Allie. She had us all to her house, and she's just, I love her.
And
she's,
the house alone is a trip, isn't
it's
it?
It's a museum. Yeah. It is a and she is a museum, just walking museum. I love her. The experience was different. Okay. Celebration is my theater home now. I'm a company member there. I'm the front of house manager now. And I think that it is a hard question to answer because it is the way that it was done, I think. I should put it this way. Celebration, Jamie Rudofsky, she cast us, and she put a family together. Mm-hmm. So we all still stay in contact. We all still do stuff together. I love them. I never left Celebration after I did Color Purple. Like, I didn't know them before, and I just harassed them until they kept me.
Right.
Like,
and
you
now
know,
you're just there. Yeah,
that's, and I feel like they're truly my family. I love them. With Dreamgirls, the Dome is a different situation. Mike Abramson, who was a producer, we met in 2008. We did Ragtime in the 99-seat Hudson Theater, squeezed together.
Yeah,
like,
I remember that.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, it was. But we met, and he was talking about it then. So when he called me, it was, like, amazing. So it's amazing two different ways. My experience with Color Purple was the best theater experience I've ever had in my life. I think work experience, best ever. Like, it will go down to me in the books of just one
it's
of those life-changing moments.
It's
yes,
that
it's
one.
That one.
Yeah.
Effie was my role. You know, it's like the role that I was meant to play.
Right.
But there were a lot of bumps and bruises along the way, but as needed. And I feel like Effie made me a better actor. Because I had more freedom to really, I had freedom to trust myself. It, you know,
all right.
So.
I don't want to paraphrase, and I don't want to speak for you, but I think what I got from you on that is that the wonderful thing about The Color Purple is that all those intangibles that are out of your control, the planets were just in
alignment.
It
went all together
when that happened,
and it was a beautiful situation.
Right. And in this one, it was just more about the challenge of doing the role. And like you said, it's the role and it's the production.
Yes,
two different things.
Yes.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Am I reading off the flashcards well?
Or yes,
do
you are. Yes, yes.
I'm joking, of course. I'm joking. We should do our arts calendar,
we do.
Michael. And
yes,
then
we should.
After we do, we'll speak to the lovely and talented Patrick.
Yes, he's
right
been
here.
Sitting over there very patiently.
Appreciate
that.
Would you kick it off?
Yes, I will.
Direct from England, ladies and gentlemen, the celebrated knee-high theater production of Noel Coward's Brief Encounter makes its L.A. premiere at the Wallace Annenberg Center for the Performing Arts, switching seamlessly between theater and film using a combination of Noel Coward's original stage play, Still Life, and the screenplay of Brief Encounter. Emma Rice, knee-high's theater artistic director, takes you back to a bygone age of romance and the silver screen. Forbidden passion brews in a 1938 railway station tea room as a suburban housewife, over a series of stolen afternoons, falls madly in love with a married doctor. The groundbreaking theatrical event, ingeniously crafted with whimsical humor, dreamy romance, and stunning multimedia effects, was hailed as a first-class return to romance, the Daily Telegraph. And the New York Times said, "Don't be ashamed if you feel a bit like swooning." Adapted and directed by Emma Rice, Brief Encounters plays through this weekend only, so don't miss it. And it's at the most, one of our newest and most beautiful theaters, medium-sized houses, at the Wallace Annenberg Theater. Tickets are available at thewallace.org or by calling 310-746-4000.
The Mask Comes Off, set during the Frank Rizzo campaign for mayor of Philadelphia and the dawn of gay pride, and loosely based on the true story of Dr. John E. Fryer, Dr. Anonymous, a world premiere drama by New York-based playwright, psychiatrist Guy Frederick Glass, tackles the controversial subject of gay conversion therapy in a tale of love and liberation. It's hard for many of us to remember a time when it was not okay for two men to walk down the street holding hands or to express their feelings for one another, says Glass. Yet it's important to remind people that there's still a faction out there who believe in the environmental aspect, that being gay is a choice. Although a work of fiction, Dr. Anonymous was inspired by a watershed moment in LGBT history when Fryer, wearing a mask and using a voice-distorting microphone, declared himself a homosexual in front of the 1972 APA convention, leading to the decision to delist homosexuality as a mental illness in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. Dr. Anonymous opens on Saturday, March 29th at the Zephyr Theater, located at 7456 Melrose, Los Angeles, between Fairfax and La Brea. And for reservations and information, call 323-960-7724. That sounds absolutely fascinating.
Yes, it
very,
does.
Very
yes, it
interested
does. Both
to,
of them do, actually.
That. Yes.
And Brief Encounters especially has been getting just rave reviews.
Oh, good, yeah. Good. I saw a show
yes.
I just want to share
yes,
a very a micro review of, because it doesn't need more than, it doesn't need too many words from me because it's doing so well without any praise, but this is 50 Shades the Musical, the original parody, the spoof, obviously, of 50 Shades of Grey. And when I was younger, I was living in Chicago in the late 80s and the early 90s, there was a group called the Annoyance Theater, and they did all these wonderful, they did the real live Brady Bunch, they did Manson the Musical.
Oh, wow.
Cannibal Cheerleaders
no.
on Crack. And they were these great, really raucous, gritty storefront, Chicago storefront things. And this was harkened so much back to that. My friend Trudy, Monica couldn't go. My wife Monica couldn't go. But my friend Trudy, also an actress.
But
also
your girlfriend
from Chicago,
Trudy could.
My girlfriend Trudy could, yes. Just very, very funny. Exactly what you'd want it to be. Raucous, bawdy. I want to call, you know, it's one of those things, I didn't read the book, but you don't have to read the book because the way they've structured it beautifully, they've structured it like a woman's book club reading the book.
Okay, good.
So it all happens at the same time, and there's this, you know, crossfading from real life to back to the book group that they do. A couple of people want to call out. The week before we did this, we had two of these women on.
Yes, we did.
Glennis McCarthy. We had on, and Sheila O'Connor, who both just burned it down. They were just wonderful, wonderful performances. Eileen Patterson, who plays Anastasia Steele, was wonderful. Christian Grey, the one that they're all talking about casting. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just say that the fantastic gentleman who portrayed him, an actor named Jack Boyce, is not what you would call a traditional...
He's
a fairly healthy young man, and it was weep-inducingly hysterical. And to say that this guy committed to this, I mean, the way what he walks on stage wearing and what he does, I mean, to see someone who is so willing to just throw it all out there online, and people just crying with laughter. Also, another person I'd like to call out, the man who plays Jose in this, Nick Semar, I don't know how to say his name, but also very, very funny. But, you know, very, very small cast. It's almost unfair to call people out because it was so tight.
Question, and, do you have to, as an audience member, do you have to be familiar with the book?
Not at all. Not at all. No, because as I said, because they've structured it as this book reading thing, they sort of touch on that, but you don't need to know it. And the fact of the matter is, it's one of those things that you don't need to know it, but if you do know it, you'll just laugh all the harder.
I see.
And there's a couple of moments. I don't want to give anything away. There's a couple of moments and some things that happen in very, very, very close proximity to the front row of the audience.
So don't say the front.
And I tell you, it's like a Gallagher concert.
I thought he was going to say.
No. Very, just very funny. Can't recommend
about scooting by.
Yes.
And it's, where is it?
50 Shades of Musical. This is at the Kirk Douglas Theater.
Yeah.
This is.
I used to work there.
What, at the Kirk Douglas?
I was an usher for 5 seasons.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful space.
It is.
The only thing that it's, and I don't want to dwell on it because if there's one little negative about this show, it's that because it is such a wonderful, grungy kind of, you know, bare bones, it's just a bed and a couple of chairs. That's, to me, the only thing that was a little odd about it was that in a venue as grand as the Kirk Douglas, you know, you're expecting a little more production value to productions that are in there. I would have loved to have seen this in like a 200-seat house where that contagion of people packed shoulder to shoulder would have just been even better. I mean, but that's nothing about the production. It's just sort of the match to production and venue. But anyway, highly recommended.
Well, good. And how do people get tickets there?
It's through the 30th, and they can get tickets, 50shadesthemusical.com. All that clicks right through to their ticket architecture.
Cool.
We can't miss with that one, it
sounds
like, right?
And
so shall we get on to our next guest, Paul?
Please do. Would you give him the intro aptly due?
Indeed, happily so. Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a native of Dayton, Ohio, who studied acting at Wright State University and the Neighborhood Playhouse and received his BFA in theater from the Boston Conservatory. After graduating, he moved to New York City, where he appeared in The Hand That Feeds You, off Broadway, and Eric Bogosian. Yeah. Thank you, Paul. Eric Bogosian's Humpty Dumpty. Regionally, he worked on the Human Races production of Big River. Shortly after moving to Los Angeles, he was cast as Alan Strang in the production company's, that's the name of the group, the production company's critically acclaimed Equus. A year later, he returned to the production company to play Mozart in Amadeus and was nominated for Best Lead Performance by the Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle. He has guest starred on many popular television shows, including Modern Family, Criminal Minds, CSI, Supernatural, NCIS, and he has a recurring role as Emery on Glee. Welcome, please, Patrick Stafford.
Hello.
That's all I got.
Great. Great.
I just saw Dayton.
Yeah.
Oh, you recorded that for us, did you?
Yeah.
Welcome, Patrick. Thank you so much for joining us. We're happy to have you.
Happy to be here.
So your experience at the award ceremony, what was that like for you? I mean, everyone wants to win. You know, I wanted to ask, how many other people were nominated in your category?
In my category, there were 7 nominees.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
There were 10 in mine.
Yeah. I think one of your co-stars was nominated in
your character.
And then and my Curtis. Co-star, Tony Abramarco, was nominated in yours.
Uh huh. And we whooped them both. I didn't mean that.
My awards experience, I was late, first of all.
You were late.
My sister was in town. And to be perfectly honest, I was the reason why we were late. I don't know why. I just was not watching time. My sister was ready, dressed. She had all the things.
Well, how late were you?
I got there right as it started.
Does your sister live locally?
There was like a mingling hour or, you know, that before, sort of thing. Yeah. My sister actually flew in from Ohio.
Oh, really?
Oh,
yeah, so she
boy, were her arms tired, too. Boy. Just, yeah.
There should be a sound effect for that.
Yeah.
Oh. Thank you.
Her arms tired.
She flew in, and it was sort of, she came Friday evening, and then this was sort of like the end of the whole trip, and she doesn't come out much. She has I have two nephews, two children, so and they're 5 and 3, so I don't get to hard see her to get, minus yeah. the children. So yeah. it was fun. It was like we were kind of like we were like back in the old days.
Yeah, yeah, to have a night out. Yeah.
No. yeah.
Now, when you
I spent most of my day saying that I'm not going to win this award to my sister because you know because I just
did. You have a speech prepared, and did you have a speech?
You want to answer first? Okay, so I did not. And the day of, my friend was like, my friend Nikita was like, you have to at least for who you're going to think. I'm like, I'm not going to win. I'm nominated against stars. I'm not going to win. She's like, you're going to win. I was like, no, I'm not. So I was like, okay. So I was actually doing my makeup and I was like, let me write these names down. And so when I won, I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. And I don't know what I said in my speech. I have no clue.
Oh, it's good.
Well, we have the tape here.
Oh, Lord.
Patrick, what did you say?
I did. Mine was not written or prepared. And I mean, there were things I knew that if I were to win, I would have to say. So I would have to thank the people that Tony, who I co-starred with, mm-hmm. and I had to thank the theater, and I mentioned my sister, and mm-hmm. I said, I think in the speech that my sister had never shown any judgment towards me in my life. So I, you know,
except with your punctuality,
exactly. Yeah. Well, even though then she was just kind of like, it's your show, it's your thing, yeah. so you can be late.
Well, I'm missing her cocktail.
yeah. yeah, exactly. I the thing that surprised me that came out of nowhere was in the middle of the speech I thanked. My teachers, not just acting teachers, anyone that ever educated me. And that just sort of just bubbled up out
beautiful.
Of nowhere. And then, you know, that's something that I
interesting think. What comes to the surface when you're in that moment, isn't it? When you just, when the you get, not that I never win, I just get nominated. But I imagine if I was ever up there. but it just gets distilled down to really what comes to the front of your brain. And and sometimes that's a great distillation process.
And I thank the critics, obviously, because, I mean, they put this show on, and it's sort of a thankless job. Job in a way,
and they
go and see so many shows. I mean, I think I said something about how I honestly believe that the critics, I think, maybe love the theater more than the people that do it. Sometimes
they keep it alive.
Yeah,
you know, they really keep us alive.
And I read everything that they write. I'm not one of these actors that's like, oh, I don't read them.
Mm-hmm. I read everything
they write, because I think sometimes they help you tell the story, and help the audience. With a story, they help with the storytelling.
Yeah, the only thing I do as well. I think the only issue that I have with certain critics is not. I'm all for criticism. I'm all for raising the bar. I'm all for getting improving the work through criticism. Mm-hmm. What bothers me is when critics write a review based on what they would have done had they written the show.
Yes,
it's like when they.
Oh,
are not criticizing what they see, but rather what they thought it should be.
We had that with The Color Purple, where they reviewed Color Purple, but the review was about how they loved the cast, but they hated the show. And the whole review was about how much they hated the show, but they loved us. And we were like, why would you write this? Because it makes you sound crazy. Right. You know what I mean? Like, really, because it was like how it should have been done like this in the book and the movie and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And it was like, evidently you didn't read the book because it was based on that and they missed the bar, but they loved us, but they just hated the show.
Sounds like one of the social media critics probably, right?
Yes, something like that.
Who add to that what Patrick's saying, and that it's the critics are for this LA Drama Critics Circle Award, it is not only now about the mainstream critics, the Los Angeles Times, and which is the only game in town, really, when trying to make theater known to everybody. But you do have some very outstanding work coming from critics who are social media.
True.
And because times are different now. Our media has changed. The Los Angeles Times barely has a staff of people that they can even have in the offices, let alone assign to go out and see a show.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so. If you get an assignment by the LA Times to come and see a 99-seat theater show, it is a big deal.
Patrick, how much do you take in of the critics? I mean, you've gotten reviews that have affected your performance at all? Have you ever?
I wouldn't say they've ever affected my performance. The critics in Los Angeles have actually been very nice to me. Mm-hmm. I mean, for the most part, if they don't like me, they usually just don't mention me.
Right.
That's about. I haven't really had a negative. Any critics say something negative. I just think that I think more what I'm trying to say is I think a lot of times they just help the storytelling. So when people go in, like I did Red, and it's about Mark Rothko, people don't know about Mark Rothko. So if you read the critics informing people about Mark Rothko, and it gets them on the same page, so when they go in,
it sets the table.
Yeah, so they do a lot of that work I like really appreciate, but it doesn't affect. I think I have enough confidence in my abilities, but I do like to see what maybe struck them. What maybe seems like they might need a little more focus, things like that.
A lot of actors don't like to admit to the fact that critics are an essential part of the process of presenting live theater, especially, and we've talked about this before, especially in a town where getting people out to live theater is more difficult than in just about any major city because the driving, the traffic, getting people back in their cars after a work week to go out to see theater and not rent that video or do the Netflix thing is one of God's great mysteries. I mean, in Chicago and New York, we'll take a cab and we'll meet at the restaurant and we'll walk over and we don't have that ahead.
And I think in Los Angeles, it's almost like it has to be a sure bet for someone to do it.
Right, because they're not going to risk it.
And I think people are more willing, like in New York City or maybe even Chicago, to pay the money.
And they plan ahead.
In Los Angeles, they're just kind of like, unless it's good, that's when I'll pay the money.
Well, the thing is, we're up against something here, and I don't like to say it too often because it makes me sound elitist, but we're up against a lot of, I mean, I have an equity waiver theater company, and one of the things we're up against is that there's a lot of theater in Los Angeles, and there's a lot of theater that is staffed and performed by people who were trained on camera classes, and they don't have theatrical chops.
And
you're just going up against that stigma. I mean, Michael, I'm sure you've encountered that. We both go out and review theater,
and we see this, I was just mentioning the Wallace Annenberg, which is really a godsend in this town, as far as a beautiful state-of-the-art theater. It's a $50 million theater in Beverly Hills, where the Beverly Hills Library is. And
it's brand new, right?
Brand new. I mean, you can smell the newness. It's so beautiful. And this acoustic.
Has that new theater smell.
Yes. But the first one, their first play was a play that was based on a story that became a film, The Little Shop Around the Corner.
Which later became a big
musical, She Loves Me.
That's right, which is great.
And this was called The Parfumery, which was the original story in Europe, and then it was translated to those other places.
And then if You've Got Mail, I think they...
And You've Got Mail, was an incarnation of it as well. And what Paul said, the set was amazing. I mean, amazing, and probably
like you walked into a perfume shop
in Europe.
Yeah. In the 20s.
It was just like, what? Who builds this kind of a set? Who can afford to build it? And then the play started, and I don't mean to sound like I'm attacking the actors here, but to what you said, Paul, they were all from television. Mm-hmm. None of them had any sense of theatricality on that stage.
Filling the space.
They were shouting their lines at each other for some reason, thinking that they had to overcompensate because it was in a theater. Yeah.
But that's going to get... that's the fear of getting people in the seats. If they have stars,
that's
people
true.
Will come.
These were not stars, though. These were people who were actors in a series that had... Well, the series was a star. They were a featured player in the series.
But some people think... That's going to draw people in. Like, I've seen them on TV for 10 seconds, so, people are going to...
And it does sometimes. But then they
get this thought of what theater is going to be now because they saw this.
And that's not
always good for the rest of us.
But, Patrick, let's talk about you for a little bit because we have kind of gone off track here. But you... What did you think when you arrived here from Dayton, L.A., every actor's dream to come out here and kind of strike it rich, strike it gold, do whatever you can. You certainly succeeded in many ways here, whereas other actors are still trying to do that.
Well, thank you. I school in Boston, lived in New York for a little bit. No success in New York. I shouldn't say no success, but nothing to write home about. And then I came out to Los Angeles, and to really what did everything for me was playing Alan in Equus.
Mm.
And I got some really great reviews, which got people in the seats, and that's how I got a manager and an agent here is because of the theater, and that's something I'm probably the most proud of is any sort of television work I get or anything like that. I like to be, it came from the theater. A lot of times I think Los Angeles actors think don't care about theater. Mm-hmm. They just want to go straight to the television.
Or it's just a springboard. Yeah.
And I, you know, that was a dream role to be play Alan in Equus, and I'd wanted to play it for 8 years or something. I read it in college, and all this time went by, and then I got to do it, and it led to so many other great things. And I just, I don't know, I'm just proud of that. What
it's
I do on television came from.
Show. Who played the therapist in that production?
His name is, I'm blanking, Jim Hanna.
Jim Hanna, okay. Because that's the relationship.
He won the lead performance that year for playing Dysart in Equus.
Really?
Yeah, wow. And Equus won Best Revival, LA Drama Critics Circle.
Wow. So and you were nominated.
I wasn't nominated for Equus. I was nominated for playing Mozart.
For Mozart, But also with the production company.
Yes, right. And okay. I lost.
Okay. Well, you're nominated.
But this year you won.
Yeah, thank you.
Patrick, what about your tenure on Glee? How is that?
Oh, so Glee, I just have a very small part on Glee, and I haven't been on there this year. I basically played this really snarky character. It was kind of fun. I got to be mean to the stars. They went to a college in New York City, and I was one of the... one of the students at that school. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to sing or anything like that, but I did. They referred to my character in the beginning before they gave him a name as a sycophant. Because he was like, basically, he would kiss people's asses, and then if they weren't good, he would be done with them. And that's basically what the character was. And it was like kind of like a Tweedledee, Tweedledum setup. I had a guy that was opposite me, and we both sort of were snarky together. Like towards Lea Michele and Chris Colfer, and
that's great.
So
now, this was shot in New York City at the time.
No. I shot it at Paramount.
Oh, at Paramount.
It takes place. That show's gone in a lot of different directions, but now part of them are. Two of the characters I think are going to school in New York City. It's called Niada. It's like a play on Niada.
Oh, okay.
Those drive.
So do you? Yeah. So do you see yourself potentially doing it again, or if they expand that storyline? Or
I think if it's all about if they write me in. I sort of became the person that would keep a story going very quickly. I would have very quick scenes, and I would just come up and get them to their next. Section.
Right.
So I was kind of a little bit, not like exposition, but I was really just a device.
Right. Transition boy.
boy who like would say something mean and then they would have to deal with that mean. Yeah. Or I was like telling a secret or telling, that sort of thing. And then they had to deal with
it. That's got to be a lot of fun though, because then you don't have the whole weight of you get to go in and have juicy moments and then leave.
Yeah, And all of my scenes are with people that for the most part were relatively well known. I did a really quick scene with Kate Hudson.
I love her character on that show when she was on it.
Yeah, she was kind of she was just mean. Yeah.
but then at the end, you know,
mean at all. Yeah, she's probably the nicest person. Her and Mark Harmon on NCIS, the nicest man ever.
Yeah, he's
crazy.
It's not the first time we've seen. My friend Cindy Katz did a pilot with Mark Harmon once.
Yeah,
speaking of Amadeus, Cindy, when they read the remake of Amadeus that they did on Broadway a few years ago, she was Constance in it.
Oh, nice.
The one
what a
with
lovely
the,
name.
Yeah, and same thing. Just and I've heard the same thing about Kate Hudson too. We're three
well,
minutes away from the end.
Baptize.
We have to do. We're going to ask you both. We can start with you, Constance, to share a performance. Disaster, embarrassment, something that happened during a show that you could, if you don't have one,
well,
you want to chew
I don't know
on
if it's embarrassment, but it was a disaster when I was doing Dreamgirls. I have quite a few, but this one in particular, the air broke in the theater and it was like hot as Hades. And so I got through, I was feeling like really kind of crazy. So I got through and I'm telling you I'm not going. And basically the way the theater set up, I had to walk out in between the audience to get to, like, at the end of the, you're singing your big, and you go out through the audience. And basically, I just felt, like, really crazy, crazy, crazy. So I'm singing a song, and then I walked out through, and I fainted.
Whoa, really?
And these two guys who were always there with water, because I was always, like, overheated, they dragged me back to the dressing room, and they basically put ice under my armpits and put my hand in a pot of ice. So that I could make it survive through and then do the rest of the show.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Reviving Effie, I guess.
Just
right.
Maybe we should write a new show.
That was an Effie disaster.
Yeah. So that was that.
Well, let me just, first of all, I just want to say shout out to International City Theater because I didn't mention them much. That's where I did Red.
Oh, yes.
So it's just, if anyone's listening, they're a great theater
company. It is one of our great
companies. And
mm-hmm.
it's down in Long Beach. Head down there. They do great stuff.
Do you know their website that you could throw out on the air?
I mean, I'm sure if you just Googled ICT or International City Theater.
Yeah, it comes right
up. They have a show going right now. They're great people, great theater, great.
Good to know.
Anyway.
And we will promote their show next week as a thank you for having
Let's see. I did a show called My Favorite Year.
I played Benji,
and there was a moment in it where he has to have this letter that's supposed to be given, that Benji's supposed to give to this the character's father, because he's kind of like this movie star father. Anyway, it's very pivotal. If I don't have this letter, the story actually cannot go on.
Oh, no.
So I don't have the invitation.
I'm going to guess I know what
in my pants. So I have to, in the scene that's happening, I had enough time. I have to run off stage, rip a piece off the stage manager's book. Because, you know, they're calling it and they're turning the pages. I have to call it, rip it, fold it up as quick as I can, make it look like something, come back on.
Oh, no.
Give it to the guy. And it didn't skip a beat, but it was terrifying. And he's reading it. And as he's reading it, he's literally reading his lines because the stage manager is calling the show. And it's the page. And that's the scene that's happening.
If you're going to give someone a prop.
Yeah. So he was like, he's reading it and looking at me like, this is not the invitation. And I'm about to say this. So that was sort of, I guess it wasn't, it didn't fall flat, but for me that was terrifying.
Oh, but that's the flop sweat moment, you know, where you just like turn on the waterworks. We're out of time.
Yes, we are.
But what a pleasure having both of you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Congratulations on both of your wins.
Many congratulations and many more awards for both.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And that is certainly seems like it's coming their way.
Paul, always a pleasure to work with you.
Always a pleasure. We'll see you all next week.
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.